to the Hot Lava Podcast. My name is Kevin Athey. I'm the Padres beat writer for the Union Tribune. Jay Posner, my boss, sports editor of the Union Tribune. We do this every series, or just about. And why wouldn't we do now, Jay, as the Padres are about to begin a series against the Diamondbacks, and for the first time in 2019, the Padres are where they have spent most of the last 9 years, below 500.
Kevin, how did this happen? They were 11-5, and now they're not. They're 23-24. You know how I love the run differential stat. You know, when they were 11-5, they were plus one. So they might have been just a little bit lucky in that 11-5 start.
Yep.
And they have been negative ever since then. So that's a span of, I don't know, a lot of games. They are minus 24 right now. Compare that with Arizona, which comes into town 25-22. So they're only, a couple games ahead of the Padres, but they are plus 28 on the run differential side. So if you believe in run differential, the Padres are actually still a little bit fortunate to be only one game under 500. And Arizona's probably right about where they should be, maybe even a game or two worse on that. But where do you want to start? What has gone wrong? The Padres have lost 11 out of 17 in May. They've lost 7 of the last 9. We kind of wrote it off a little bit last week when we talked that, they played the Dodgers and the Rockies. Those are two pretty good teams. Of course, then turned around, the Rockies got swept by the Phillies. And the Pirates came in here and won 3 out of 4. They had a couple pretty good-looking ball players on that team. Really impressed with Josh Bell and Brian Reynolds and the way the ball kind of jumps off their bat. But this isn't a Pirates podcast. So the Padres, on the other hand, didn't do a lot over the weekend. Got in a couple of big holes thanks to rookie pitchers on the last couple of days. So where do you want to start today, Kevin Athey?
Well, Jay, I mean, you said that we explained they were playing the Dodgers and the Rockies, and it's valid. But also, the same thing we've been saying all along is, the Padres are who they are. And it's like my answer to everybody, be it visiting beat writers, be it fans, on the street or whatever, anybody is. Anything I've said all along, whether they were 11-5, 11-11, 22-18, all this team is a little better and a little more exciting, and the future is probably going to be better than the now. I think that 22-23 is a pretty decent place for a team that can't hit. I mean, Ian Kinsler, what's funny about it is, if we've been defending Ian Kinsler, who I think we're going to hear from later in the show, play some of Annie Heilbrun's sound from Ian Kinsler talking about the incident. Don't think we need to explain it here on a family program.
Right.
We're defending him insofar as much as we've been saying it's not just Ian Kinsler. Well, they wouldn't even have beat the Pirates without Ian Kinsler.
That's what's so funny. That whole incident was on Thursday. It feels like it was so long ago, but that was the one win that they had over the weekend, was Kinsler getting the big home run and then doing what he did after that, which I don't think that anybody could defend what he did. I think there are varying levels of outrage that are probably appropriate to it. I just speaking for myself, I don't think there's obviously any place for that, especially aiming it at, as he appeared to do, aiming it at the fans. The fans aren't the ones hitting 170. If he wants to, as he said, try to get his mates fired up, there's ways to do that without including the word "you" or "all of them" or people like that or words like that in his in his outburst. I do think Kinsler has taken a larger amount of the blame for this season. I'm not talking about the incident now.
That's all.
This season, he's taken a larger amount of the blame than he deserves. He's been the whipping boy on Twitter. I'm not exactly sure why. He hasn't had a good season, but there are a lot of guys who haven't had a good season.
That's
all I'm saying. I would never defend what Kinsler did the other day. I wonder how much we'll see of him. Even like this week against Arizona, I believe they're starting 3 right-handed pitchers. So we've seen Greg Garcia a lot against right-handers.
Uh-huh.
So you wrote over the weekend about how Kinsler knows he's going to have to transition here once Tatis comes back. And that, moving on a little bit, Tatis has been someone who has been missed quite a bit. And so I think before we get into that, though, let's pop in this tape here of what Kinsler had to say about what happened on Thursday.
It looked like you had a message for the fans. No, I didn't. That was for my teammates. I mean, it had nothing to do with the fans. It's for my teammates. It's the inside thing with them, and just trying to get everybody fired up. I mean, we had a tough road trip. I'm a passionate player. You know, I try to get my teammates going, and that was it. We need the fans behind us. I mean, that's what we need. We need the city of San Diego to be passionate with us and on our side, and you know, hopefully that's the way they see this team.
Because a lot of fans felt it was directed to them.
Okay.
Passionate on.
Yeah, I'm trying to get my guys fired up. I mean, we're playing a tight game.
Right.
You know, Framil gave us the lead. We lost the lead, and you know, after that is kind of waiting. You know, waiting around. It's kind of been what we've been. You know, what's been going on in the road trip. Offensively, just kind of waiting around, and I've been struggling, and finally come up with a big hit like that. I was fired up. You don't really want to swing the bat frustrated, you know. You get in your own way, but just to be able to come up with that hit, it was nice to help the team tonight. You know, in my past 4 or 5 starts, I haven't really helped the team. So tonight to come up with that big hit, and then for our bullpen to close it out the way they did and get the win, it was big.
So there was Ian Kinsler talking about what happened on Thursday. It's obviously been discussed, dissected, anything you want. But as I was mentioning just before that, I think, you know, even a bigger issue than Kinsler's failures this year is missing Fernando Tatis over these past few weeks. Lack of excitement on the offensive side, lack of excitement on the defensive side. Manny Machado has been fantastic as a defensive replacement for him, but there's been no replacing Tatis's offense. You know, Ty France has not been all that good. You know, when they've tried to go with Garcia and Kinsler, it hasn't worked. So this is a team that needs to get Tatis back in the lineup. And, Kevin, that's going to happen when?
Well, the new projection is that it will be a Fernando Tatis Jr. and Vladimir Guerrero Jr. reunion, childhood friends,
very
number
nice.
1 and 2 prospects in Toronto. That said, the Padres have been somewhat surprised. And be that their medical staff, you know, was too optimistic or that hamstrings are a tricky thing, which the Padres have said all from the start, but they expected him back before this. But you know what? They also said they were all along going to wait until this guy was 100%. And evidently he's at 90%. That's what I'm told. And that he still feels a little something, and no one's going to push him beyond what he is comfortable with, given his importance to the franchise going forward. And certainly his importance to the team right now. I would say a huge deal is that Will Myers has not even come close to replicating what Fernando Tatis brings, and he hasn't even come close to replicating what Will Myers has brought before. So
right.
That's a huge problem.
Yeah, even in the first month of the season,
yes.
What Myers brought, and when we, or maybe it wasn't even a month, but a few weeks, and you know, I think we talked about it, and I think fans were excited about what Myers looked like he was going to bring this year, and now he literally strikes out every other time he comes to the plate. And it sometimes seems like more than that, which is almost hard to believe.
Let me ask you this. If this is the worst slump of his career, both in not making contact and batting average, everything,
mm-hmm.
It's remarkable. It's like a 360 batting average on balls in play, like leads the league or something. It's like incredible when he's striking, but he's striking out. Anyway, listen, what if Will Myers rebounds and is Will Myers? And he finishes with 25 homers and 30 doubles and 20 steals, and he's on base at 320. Is Will Myers still a good? Is he a good player? Like if he keeps doing this up and then these incredible valleys that hurt the team in such a bad way, like, but what's the Will Myers story?
Well, the Will Myers story is he's due $60 million over the next 3 years,
yeah.
Which makes him really difficult to trade. What you would hope. And I'm not exactly sure what you're getting into in your cabinet this morning if you've got Myers finishing with all those numbers today by the end of the season.
What I'm saying is,
but
he
I know
has
what
been
you,
streaky
I,
before. It's
no,
not like he's
of course.
Broken.
Of course, I know exactly
but
what you mean.
But is he worth it?
And what like, I was going to say as you were saying that was going to be, boy, if you could get him to the point where he had trade value, you would try to trade him. The problem is his trade value is limited by the contract that they gave him a couple years ago. And, you know, I don't know right now that you could, you couldn't get anything for Will Myers. Now, if he got his numbers up to where you're talking about, maybe you could get a little something for him. You could get more if you were willing to pick up some of the money. But he's really, it's a really difficult situation because they need, if you're going to say that they have Renfro and Reyes and those are going to be your corner outfielders, this team desperately needs a center fielder. And even if Myers is going to hit, like you're talking about, I don't know that that you could put him in center field and say, okay, we're satisfied with that outfield of those three guys. So especially in some of the parks this team has to play in, including its own, it's not as big as it used to be, but it's still a spacious park, you know, as are San Francisco and Colorado and a lot of places where the Padres play a lot of games. I just think you'd say, great, let's use him to trade for somebody, trade for a center fielder, but you're not going to get that with where he is. I mean, I really don't know what the answer is for Will Myers at this point, other than he's completely useless to anybody right now. Now, I don't expect him to continue to strike out, you know, every other time he comes to the plate. I mean, I think he's better than that. But right now, they're in a real bind with Myers, and, you know, we can see what happens as the season goes on. But I don't know that there's an easy out at this point.
It bothers me because I think everyone knows I think highly of him as a person, and anybody who would meet him would think highly of him as a person. I see the talent that is there, but I can't help but think that it's basically Matt Kemp. I mean, I think that the next time that he does show that he has any value, it is going to be that type of situation where they have worked to trade him before, but they couldn't. And it's for the reasons that you've said, but at some point they're going to, and it's going to be some sort of package where prospects, Padres need a certain amount of money. It's just that at this point, it's the feeling in the organization is we can't keep doing this. That is my interpretation of the situation.
Right. I mean, I just think that, you know, going forward, and they as you said, they have to have a center fielder on this team. I don't see Myers being the answer. The more time goes, I don't see Manny Margot being the answer. I'm not sure there's an answer in the farm system right now. To me, that's like the top priority for this team, other than and probably the top priority, because I do think eventually in another year or two there's going to be plenty of starting pitching. But to me, the top priority right now is to find a center fielder. The other thing I would love to see, and maybe you could update on this, I haven't asked you about this in a while, is where is Mejia at this point? Because the more we see Austin Hedges, the more to me he looks like a guy who needs to maybe be a backup at least for a while. And let's see what Mejia can, instead of playing Hedges 5 days, 4 or 5 days a week, maybe play Mejia 4 or 5 days a week, and let's see exactly what they have in this guy. Do you have any timetable on his return?
So that there'll probably be a short rehab assignment. He is catching, and, you know, like catching bullpens and progressing every day, supposedly, to this point without any setback. Probably get him a little bit of a rehab assignment. And then I would expect when he comes back for him to catch more. What was going to happen, and this is before any of us were let in on the injury, if he was going to start a couple more times, but he couldn't because the knee was bothering him.
Right, right.
Well, what if he'd started a couple more times and hit more? Would that have led to a couple more? And so I think when he comes back, he's going to be given more opportunity to start. Mm-hmm. And that will certainly be my line of questioning as we go forward. And I'll probably be rebuffed as become Andy Green's way. It's not saying anything. But anyway, that's my problem, not yours.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I would expect that he would play more. And that the reason Mejia was brought in was because the Padres felt like they couldn't have that void in their lineup, especially if they didn't have it elsewhere. You could have a catcher not hitting whatever it is down to now, 150. You could have a catcher hitting 220 and whatever else was brought, the 16 to 20 home runs, if he was in a different lineup. But he's not in a different lineup.
Right, right. No, I mean, there's too many.
And he's not hitting 220.
that's true also. There's just too many holes in this lineup right now. And the plan going into the season was this team was going to hit the ball and they were going to score, and they were going to score a lot of runs. And that was going to make up for the fact that I think I texted you the other day, might've been when Margavichus was having his poor outing, that, you know, this pitching performance should not be really unexpected. I mean, they're rolling out a group of starters, as you've written many times. I don't think anybody has more than 35 or 40 starts in the big leagues maybe not even 35 at this point. Lucchesi's right around there.
It is 35 for Lucchesi.
Okay, so you're right around 35 starts. You know, Strom and Paddock are their two best pitchers at this point. They're both on innings limits. You know, Quantrill or whoever else is going to come up and pitch, Margavichus, those guys are rookies that, you know, under normal circumstances probably wouldn't even be in the big leagues yet. Lauer and Lucchesi, you know, Lauer's been disappointing. But even we've talked before about the ceiling on these guys being eventually number four or five starters. So we really should have seen this coming in terms of pitching.
Oh, yeah.
Where the letdown has been.
We did.
And we did because we talked about it. And you wrote about it. And the letdown has been the bullpen a little bit, and especially the offense. And they were supposed to score more runs, and that was going to result in wins. But they aren't really doing that. And
these aren't excuses. These aren't excuses, but, like, the bullpen has been hit hard, man. And so, like, guys have been overused. And so there's an explanation there, but you're 100%. This falls on the offense, without a doubt. And I'll tell you what, people in the organization who've been around, which is most of them, you know, quietly worried about this. Like, they knew it was going to happen. We're wasting the best portion of the season by this starting rotation.
Right, right.
We left five wins on the table because this starting rotation gave us a chance and we didn't capitalize, and because it's not going to continue to be a 3.40 ERA by this starting rotation. And that's where we're at.
So let's talk about this, because this has been brought up, and we talked a little bit about it on Thursday when we did our quarterly report or whatever we called it. Should the Padres be looking to add pitching? And if they are, is there any pitching to be added? I know people look at Dallas Keuchel, and, you know, Dallas Keuchel's out there. He's not going to be signed before the draft because, you know, nobody's going to want to give up a pick. But the draft's only a couple weeks away. So after that, if there is any sort of bidding war for Dallas Keuchel, should the Padres be involved? And would it do any good for them to be involved? And it would do any good because would Dallas Keuchel want to come here when you got to figure there's going to be teams that are, you know, in contention and have a better chance of winning the World Series that you would think Keuchel would want to go to? So where do you think we stand on the Keuchel situation? And should the Padres even make a bid for him at this point? I'll leave it
there.
Sure,
they should make
a
bid.
I'll hang up and listen, except I won't really hang up.
That was awesome.
Except I won't really hang up.
There's a deal. Without a doubt, I was told that they're in on him. They'll be in on him. They continue the conversations. We all know that AJ Preller, in particular, is not going to give up what I believe is it would be the Padres' fourth pick. It's all based on what pick you give up now is based on whether you're revenue sharing or not.
Right.
So it's like after compensation round B or whatever it's called. So we know that AJ Preller is not going to do that. No one's going to do that. There will be contenders in on him. We know that Dallas Keuchel hasn't been signed. Partially because the money he's asking for, and kudos to him. But also, teams don't think he's that great anymore.
Mm-hmm.
He's going to be an innings eater. I don't know how intense the bidding will get. But I think that the Padres, as I've said many times, are very aware of who they are. And so, look, they do need innings. But if they're not contenders, as you mentioned, why would Keuchel come here? Not that we know what his intentions are. But the Padres have Logan Allen to see. They have Cal Quantrill to see. They're going to at some point have to give Jerry Keel at least a couple starts. You know, they've got younger guys that
we hope to see Lamet later. Right.
Right. Though they believe that no matter what happens this year with Lamet, does he come back and throw 5 4-inning starts or 10 5-inning starts, whatever, they believe Lamet, boom, penciled in, top of the rotation, or, you know, up there near the top next year, though he'll still be on the rotation next year. Anyway, I don't know, man. I don't know. I've always thought Keuchel made sense, and that's because people in the organization told me he made sense.
I guess
AJ Preller gives off every indication he's sticking with finding out what the guys they have.
To me, there's two things about the Keuchel thing, and I want to get back to finding out what guys can do, because you mentioned something to me off before we did this. But with Keuchel, the thing is, there's two ways to look at it. One is, yes, he'll eat up innings, some innings, you know, a few more innings than they're getting now out of their starters. But the other side is, let's say, I mean, what difference is he going to make in terms of wins and losses, if you want to look at it that way? Is he going to, is, is if he has, even if he put together like a three war season over the last half, and let, so let's say that makes him three wins better than, you know, your average Joe, is three wins a big deal, or does it lead to more because he eats up innings? I mean, I know there's a there's an effect there. So I think it's good to be involved with him, but I just don't know. Part of me thinks, why would he come here? Unless he's just looking to, you know, spend a nice summer where the weather's nicer than, you know, some other places. But let's get back.
There was a point when they were up in the standings and they were, one of the most exciting
maybe a little different,
and,
right.
Yeah, but, you know, reality has set in. So good for everybody for, you know, good for Keuchel for knowing and good for the Padres for knowing. And I guess that's why you wait, right? So,
and you talk,
go ahead, Jay.
Yeah, I was going to say, you talked a little bit about, Preller wants to find out what they have. And that was sort of the attitude that they had last year and probably the year before even, but especially last year. And then this year seemed like it was going to be a little bit different, where it was more than that. It was more than just, you know, seeing that. It was more about – it was also going to be about winning more games. So do you think there's been a shift in philosophy right now, and – or is it just a slight shift, and could it change based on what happens? Or what do you think's going on there?
I think the key word you used is also. They've been very clear all along. We're trying to win. But you got to understand, like, wink, wink, we kind of know where we're at, and we got to find out where we can be next year. I believe there has been a little shift in, let's say, particularly Andy Green's comments, and one that he made yesterday, and I'm in the process of writing something right now, was about Cal Quantrill and, you know, this competition here at the back of the rotation. Basically, by sending Nick Margavich's down, they were essentially saying, Cal, you got a job for a while here, buddy.
Right.
Well, then he goes out and he gives up four runs in the first inning. He gives up five runs, you know, to his credit. I don't know that I've ever seen anybody be as bad the first inning and then it's good after that. I mean, because the contrast is amazing. But anyway, Cal Quantrill's got some work to do. So rather than sending him up and down, maybe they let him do it here like they to give him the same chance they gave Eric Lauer and Joey Lucchesi. It seemed to me that that's what Andy Green was indicating might happen. Like I said, I'll be writing, I'll post it later today. I do think there's been a slight shift, like, or at least in them letting us know, hey, let's pump the brakes here. We still have some people we need to find out about.
No, that makes sense. And I do think it would be, and this is not a reason to give Quantrill the start, but I it seems like his next start would be Saturday in Toronto. Seems like it'd be a cool thing to do, to let him pitch in Canada, where his dad pitched and all that stuff. And maybe that's something that kind of gets him going. Maybe he's able to figure something out in a different country as to why he can't get people out in the first inning or something. I don't know. Maybe hearing "Oh Canada" will do it for him before the game.
He's a smart guy.
Yeah, I'm not sure. Mean, and then after that, I mean, I'm looking at the schedule. If, you know, sticking with their rotation with off days and stuff, he'd get a start against the Marlins after that. And I think after that would probably be the Nationals. Both of those would be at Petco. So, you know, let's see what happens. I mean, if he goes out and gets shelled again in Toronto, I'm not sure they can keep doing this where they want to fall behind 4-0 in every game. But I do think it'd be nice to see him pitch there. You were right.
I mean,
the
last 2 days have felt like 2018 and 2017. I mean, it just has.
Right.
And I know they made a nice little comeback yesterday and certainly had a chance to win that game. But, like, you're down 5-0 in the third, 4-0 in the first. You can't do that.
Yeah. No, I think that's true. And you know,
Allen threw five innings yesterday.
Mm-hmm.
Logan Allen was always the guy who was going to be up for Quantrill. I'm getting the idea that Quantrill will stay, but who could predict what these guys are going to do anymore? But Logan Allen's going to be up here soon.
Right. No, I look forward to that. I was just looking at the schedule and I was they're one. They need one more starter to come up or something, where right now Paddock's pitching tonight, Monday night as we tape this. He'll pitch Sunday in Toronto, which means he misses a game at Yankee Stadium, which would have been kind of cool to see pitch there. But now it looks like Strom will get the first game on Memorial Day at Yankee Stadium. But anyway, that's a couple series away. I don't want to get too far ahead. I do want to mention that already on the site today, And obviously, we're taping this a couple hours before other people will hear it. But as a column from Tom Krasovic, who's, you know, been around this team for, I don't know, close to, 25, 30 years now, all through the Bochy years, wrote a column about the difference between when Bochy was hired and how the pressure was on to win right away, how that's not the case with Andy Green. And, you know, also brings up some the ideas about how much help Bochy had from what was on his roster back then. You know, guys like Gwynn, Caminiti, Joyner, Finley. I don't even think he mentioned Vaughn. Fernando and Ricky were on the teams in 96. Kevin Brown obviously had one of the, you know, one of the great seasons in Padres history in 98. So a lot more help and than the Padres have right now in terms of the roster. And he even gives an opinion about, you know, whether the
don't give the spoiler because it's kind of a surprise ending.
Yeah, there's an ending about what he thinks about if Bochy was managing this team today. So anyway, people should check that out either online or it'll also be in print on Tuesday. And by that point, the Padres will have played Arizona. Tonight is a Paddock night, and he goes against Luke Weaver, who pitched pretty well against the Padres in Arizona. And then tomorrow night is Zach Greinke, who the last time he was here not only beat the Padres with his arm, but if I remember correctly, hit a couple of home runs.
Yes, he did, off Eric Lauer. Lauer and Warren.
Right. Greinke at the plate this year is 7 for 24, and 5 of his hits have been for extra bases. He's slugging over 700. Which was pretty funny to see that. But more concern to the Padres is the fact that in 5 of his last 6 starts, he's allowed 0 or 1 run for a total of 2 earned runs in 35 and a third. So the Padres will be up against it tomorrow night. But Matt Strom has also pitched well. And then the final game on Wednesday, which is a day game, Merrill Kelly, who 11 innings, 7 runs against the Padres in 2 starts so far, and against Eric Lauer, who at some point needs to show some improvement, I would think.
Yeah, I think Joey Lucchesi's had 2 real good starts, the last 2, and Eric, the last one, arguably until the end, which sort of has been his issue, ran into it a little bit. That's been Eric's issue. And when you're Eric Lauer without, say, the stuff, right, the real electric stuff that's going to get you the out pitch, that's going to get you out of stuff, I mean, you got to be on when you're Eric Lauer. And he's on for 4 innings and not for 1 or something like that. So, yeah, and Eric Lauer knows it, too. So, hey, we'll see.
Well, and it's a good
what these guys
– go ahead.
I just think that's what these guys want to see. I mean, like we've said, we're not putting down Lauer. It's that the Padres need to know if Lauer can be in the rotation when Mackenzie Gore is and when Jarrett Richardson is and Denelson Lamet and Chris Paddock and Matt Strom. I mean, they need to know.
Right, right. No, I mean, it's funny. I was looking at something the other day and somebody on Twitter reminded me about Jarrett Richards. It's like talking about next year's rotation. Totally forgot about him. Another guy that, you know, that they're counting on as a possibility for next year. And Lauer won't have it easy. I mean, the Diamondbacks have a good lineup, and I think they're second in the league in runs scored. They're first in slugging. So another good test for Paddock and Strom and Lauer this week at Petco, and then we'll get you out of the country, which I think a lot of people have probably been pining for years.
And probably including the person I just left, my house. She's probably happy. Canada, they have a no return policy. Let me ask you that.
I don't know. We'll have to check on that.
My last thing, and this could take us down a rabbit hole. Let's not go there. But you mentioned Jarrett Richards. They're kind of counting on, or something. However you phrased it. No, they're counting on Jarrett Richards. I mean, can you imagine? Like, look, winning will solve everything. Every winning organization has made some huge multi-million dollar blunders. But let's just say that Jarrett Richards, you know, isn't what they expect him to be. So Chase Headley, Ian Kinsler, Jarrett Richards, 8 mil. Actually, it would be 15 mil to not pitch for him. At some point, you know, someone's going to have to answer for that.
Well, Josh Johnson, was that a previous administration?
Previous.
Okay.
Yes.
But that
wasn't it?
Kind of along the same lines. I think it was. I don't know. So I'm sure someone will correct
us. I think you're right. I think that was this one. No, like those had like you know, Garrett Richards was sold to the people who write the checks as 16 mil is worth it because this guy is going to be our ace in 2019 or 2020. I mean,
right.
So
right.
But anyway.
No, I mean, that would be it'd be really interesting if when you start talking about guys like him and Lamet, you know, coming back and joining with others. Josh Johnson looks like he was signed in 2013. So
okay, so then I should have just stuck with my original answer, which was no, that was previous regime.
Right.
But anyway,
right. But anyway, that's enough for today. We've got three home games coming, and then. Assuming I assume that that phones work in Canada and we'll be able to do this from Toronto. I'm sure you have a suite at the Sky Dome Hotel on for the weekend.
No, that was a little expensive. I'm down the road a bit.
Okay, all right, that's the right answer. So anyway,
that would have been cool though.
I know. So anyway, thanks everyone for listening and join us again on Friday when one of us will be in Canada.
All right, thank you, everybody.